Welcome to Shooting It with Jamie and Kenny.
I know when to go out. I know when to stay in. Get things done.
It's what I want in a relationship, which might explain why I'm single now. Ha ha.
Sail on a boat fit for a Bond villain. Sometimes you need to play the part, right?
I want people to get me. That's why I'm gonna kill everyone in this room.
Master Athos, come here!
I'll come wherever the fuck I want, James. I'll fucking come in your kitchen. I'll come on your fucking art. I'll come anywhere I want.
Get your face off my cock.
I have a friend. And the absurd thing is she's actually an operating system Charles left her behind, but she's totally amazing.
If you ride like lightning, gonna crash like
that. Welcome to Shooting It with Jamie and Kenny. I'm your host, Jamie K, here with you for a brand new episode, episode 29. And I regret to inform you that Kenny is not in studio today, but I do have a substitute co-host this evening.
Howdy.
That's Amy.
Hi.
She seems very meek in front of the mic. She's only been on the show once before. And instead of doing a regular show this evening, we're going to do our top 10 favorite films of 2013 and the five most disappointing movies of 2013. Without jumping right into the list, why don't we talk about what films we enjoyed but didn't qualify in the top 10?
Ooh, honorable mentions.
Yes, honorable mentions.
I like those. A movie that I liked but I didn't put on my top 10 was Stoker. I don't know if I liked it so much at first, but I liked that it made me feel uncomfortable, which I feel like...
Was it the incest scenes?
Yeah. Well, I mean, not specifically
you liked them,
that...
but you didn't feel
no.
comfortable with liking them?
No, they're what made me uncomfortable. But I feel like its goal was to make you feel uncomfortable, so...
I don't think there's ever been an incest scene where it's like, oh, this is nice.
No, I mean, the movie's
supposed
goal.
To like this.
Right.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
So I feel like it accomplished what it set out to do.
I hated Stoker at first. I was really disappointed with it. I was expecting another Old Boy or Sympathy for Lady Vengeance, and I didn't get that. I got a really confusing horror film. But then I rewatched it. And I kind of understood it a little bit more and how it's supposed to be taken in more of an abstract way. Something like Only God Forgives could be compared in that kind of similar vein, where what you're seeing on screen is actually a metaphor for something else the entire time. That movie, too, I was very disappointed in after watching it. And then I watched it again a second time. Also features implied incest. A lot of incest movies this year.
You like it.
Yeah, and I wound up liking it more. Were there any other movies that you liked other than Stoker that didn't make your list?
I liked As I Lay Dying, but it made me feel kind of nauseous with the split screen. Like, I think it was a cool concept, but I don't know if it was, there was just too much of it.
Yeah, James Franco definitely abused the split screen feature. Like, no one else is really doing that. I can understand why he might have went overboard, but yeah, too much for my liking. That would also go on my notable mentions list, along with Filth, that did not go in my top 10.
Ugh.
I love Filth. I love James McAvoy in Filth. I thought he was great. I thought that was one of the best performances in a movie I've seen this year.
I like James McAvoy so much, but he just seems like a sweetheart in real life. And so...
Did you find him hard to believe?
No, not really. But that's what was off-putting about it for me.
So you didn't like seeing
this? Again, it made me uncomfortable.
I read about a dog-fucking scene, but I didn't see that in the movie.
Me either.
Another one that didn't make my top 10, Francis Ha, which is in the Criterion Collection. Noah Baumbach directed that. And it stars Greta Gerwig as Francis, and I don't have too much to say about that, so I'm not going to continue to go on and on and on about it. But another one, Dallas Buyers Club with Matthew McConaughey. I thought he was phenomenal in that. I think he probably gave the best performance of the year. How did you feel about Prisoners?
I liked it, I guess.
You guess?
Mean, yeah, it wasn't as intense as I was hoping it would be.
It wasn't?
No, because it was, yeah, they had this guy, like, cooped up in this house, but it didn't seem, like, as gung-ho. It wasn't as action-y as I was hoping it would be.
I think you only expected action because Hugh Jackman was the star.
Yeah.
Okay. another one, and it pained me to cut this being a DC fanboy, but Man of Steel did not make my top 10. It was so close to getting in there, but I was like, I'd be lying to myself if I included it. Because as good as it was, and... I really think the movie's underrated. I didn't think it deserved a 53% on Rotten Tomatoes. Critics completely missed the mark. And it really annoys me when I read critic reviews of it, or just you know, regular fans reviewing it, and they're like, oh, it's too dark, it's too depressing, he's too mopey to be Superman, where's all the joy? Like, you have the Christopher Reeve films from the 70s and 80s. Go back and watch that.
I just want people to know that this is not what you sound like in real life.
It is too how I sound like.
It is totally not what you sound like in real life.
What is that even? What are you talking about?
You drop your voice like an entire octave.
That is a lie. You don't, no.
It's a little bit true. Maybe not a whole octave.
Anyway, why don't we get into the top 10, okay? And I'll let you begin. So
let me begin.
Yeah, what was number 10 on your list?
The
10th best film of the, or her favorite film of the year, yeah, according to Amy.
Yeah, my number 10 was actually a documentary. It was Necessary Evil.
That DC Comics documentary?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I liked it. See, I'm not a comic book person, and I will never be in my life. But that's okay. But I liked it because, I don't know, whenever I watch superhero films or whatever, I don't really think about the villains in them.
Why? The villains are the best part.
Right. But I don't think about them critically. It's just kind of like, oh, here's this person that's doing bad things. But the
So you
but
don't
the
evaluate, like, beyond their whole...
Right, yeah. So the documentary told you about the story of all of the villains, which I really enjoyed, and thinking about what their motives are, why they do bad things, and how crucial they are to the stories. And I also never really thought about, in particular, like, the relationship between Batman and the Joker, about how, like, the Joker only does what he does for Batman.
My number 10 is also a documentary. Room 237. 237. The entire film is an analysis of Kubrick's The Shining, and they have all these weird film scholar people who give their own interpretation of what Kubrick was kind of trying to say behind the scenes. And there's a lot of really interesting theories behind that, and then some of them are just completely fucking whack. Like the guy who thought that Kubrick was trying to convey to the viewer that he faked the moon landing because Danny wore a NASA sweater or something. Ridiculous. But you know, there were some in there that actually had me convinced. The whole Native American slaughter. I really thought that documentary was really minimal, but also really well done.
My number 9?
No, your number 7. What do you think?
I don't know. My number 9 was The Way, Way Back, where the family goes on vacation and the son starts to work at a water park.
Yeah. I like that movie. I didn't think he was a very good actor, but I thought everything else about the movie was good.
See, and I think that I liked it. Like, all my reasons for picking these movies are kind of lame. But this one I think I liked for more personal reasons, because it sort of is like, well, that's what I want my summer to be. And it also kind of reminded me of home, because all my friends growing up, or rather in high school, worked at Sesame Place over the summer. And so I feel like that could be a summer that they had.
I thought Steve Carell was really great in that movie. He's such a dick. He should play more roles like that instead of the goofy character. He's not as good at the goofy character as he is just playing an asshole.
Really?
I don't know. I'm not a fan of The Office.
No,
USA.
Me either.
I think I don't buy him as Michael Scott. People were always like, oh, he deserves an Emmy. He's so great in this role. And really,
right, but I feel like...
He was derivative of Ricky Gervais. He tried...
Well, that's
for the entire first
entire
season.
Point?
No, because the other characters aren't really derivative of the UK show's characters, except for Jim and Pam. Dwight, he's original. Every other character is original. The entire first season of The US Office, like, Steve Carell even put on 30 pounds to look fat and try and be the David Brent type character. It just didn't work for him. And Anchorman, he's good at that, but, I mean, you hate Anchorman for some reason. You haven't even seen it.
I don't hate it. I haven't seen it, and I just have
no
desire.
What do you have against Anchorman?
I have no desire to see it. Like, that type of comedy just doesn't appeal to me.
Do you hate Will Ferrell?
Yeah, a little bit.
Really? I mean, he's not great anymore, but Anchorman was...
I liked Elf.
Number 9 on my list... Behind the Candelabra. Now, I almost didn't put this on my list because it was a TV movie. It was theatrically released in the UK, but I almost didn't include it. And I'm glad I did, because you did put that DC Comics documentary on your list, and it would have been weird for me to not include this, but you include that. I thought Michael Douglas gave one of the best performances of the year as Liberace, and it's really a shame that TV movies cannot get Oscar eligibility. I really don't have too much to say about this movie. I just found it incredibly compelling. I thought Steven Soderbergh did a fantastic job directing it. Matt Damon was wonderful. Rob Lowe really stole the show, though. Do you remember his part in that movie?
I didn't see it.
You didn't see Behind the Candelabra?
No,
I could have sworn we watched it together.
Nope.
Maybe you fell asleep
midway
through.
Somebody else.
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. My mom saw it. She said it was good.
It was good. It's a lot of gay sex. That's why it ranked number 9 for me. Number 8.
My number 8 was The World's End.
The World's End.
That
was another one that almost came close to cracking my top 10. But I ultimately didn't put it in there because I thought there were other good movies, obviously.
Yeah.
I think it's probably the best or second best, actually, after Shaun of the Dead that Edgar Wright has done.
I don't know. I just enjoyed it. I thought it was funny. I like British people and British humor.
So it's number eight just because British people.
Pretty much.
Wow.
No, but am I the only one who thought that, like, the blue goo, it reminded them of porta-potties? Was that just me?
I think that was deliberate.
It was deliberate?
I think so. I mean, the whole fight scene broke out in a bathroom to begin with. Number eight for me. Short-term 12. You should not be talking while I'm talking, because now I'm going to have to cut that. Number eight for me would be short-term 12. I only watched this movie last night, and it wound up knocking Out of the Furnace out of my top 20 for the year. Brie Larson is fantastic in it, John Gallagher Jr. It's about a couple and two other people who kind of watch after this pseudo-foster home for kids that come from abusive backgrounds, and it was a really touching, awesome film, and I suggest you check it out. I'm pretty sure it comes out on Blu-ray in a couple of days, so yeah, you might want to look into that.
Number seven for me was Prince Avalanche. It was pretty, and it was one of those things where, like, you don't think about the people who paint the lines on the road, and it made me want to just, like, move out into the woods and chill there for a while.
Like that old lady who just randomly goes through scraps of our burnt down home.
I couldn't decide if she was real or not.
No, she was real.
She was real? Yeah. I got the impression that she was like a figment of his imagination or something for a while.
Now, I actually read that when they were filming that, they just happened upon her. Like, she wasn't an actor in the movie.
So she was just a lady?
No. They were just like, hey, you know, we're filming something. Is it okay if Paul Rudd talks to you for a little bit and we record this?
I like that.
They lucked out with that whole scene.
Were we supposed to question if she was a figment of his imagination?
I mean, I guess so, because there was, like, that scene at the end where she's just kind of ignoring them, and then the truck driver guy was like, what lady?
Yeah, exactly.
I think they were just fucking with you.
Hmm.
You know, it's funny because Prince Avalanche was directed by David Gordon Green, and Short Term 12 is really reminiscent of his older work, specifically George Washington and All the Real Girls. And it's kind of nice to see that David Gordon Green is having sort of a comeback after doing The Sitter with Jonah Hill. That was his last movie that he directed, and God fucking damn, was it just horrible. Like, I was wondering, how did they get such a talented actor and filmmaker and Sam Rockwell to be in this and just completely shit up the place? It was really just, unbelievably bad. Number seven for me would be The Hunt, starring Mads Mikkelsen as a father who is accused of pedophilia, and he's innocent. Now, you did not watch The Hunt, no.
No.
It was a Danish movie. And oh my God, it fucking killed my heart when I watched it. It was so sad because a little girl.
Did you cry a little bit?
No. Almost cried during Her. I'll willingly admit that. But The Hunt, it's just a movie where it pains you to watch it. Because, all right, now here's the general gist of the movie. He's babysitting a bunch of kids, and a little girl develops a crush on Mads Mikkelsen. She's like 4 years old. You know, stupid little thing. She gives him like a Valentine's Day card or something. Like, she's a little fucked up because I guess one of her brother's friends showed her a penis on a phone or something, and so she's a little weirded out. And what happens is she winds up saying something to one of the school teachers, and his name is brought up, and then all of a sudden there's an investigation. You know, he's cleared of it. He's not in any trouble, but that certain stigma, you know, follows him. People of the town think he's been touching little girls. They treat him like shit. He can't even go shopping without having cans thrown at him, being beaten up. And even after everything is cleared out of the way, the final scene is Mads Mikkelsen and his family on a hunting trip. And, spoiler alert, someone fires off their sniper at him. Doesn't hit him, but it's just like a constant reminder that he's always going to have to look over his shoulder just because of a lie that was told about him. He's always going to have that stigma surrounding him that he's a kid toucher. And people will always secretly hate him for that because, you know, that's a huge problem. Where people will automatically side with the victim, even if they have not supplied accurate information. Where the person will not always be genuine, or they'll be confused or something of that matter, and a person's life is ruined because of that. And the problem with that, you can't even really talk about stuff like that, because as soon as you do, then you're going to be called a victim blamer. Anyway, I might have just completely brought this show down with that shit.
Yes.
What was number six for you?
My number six pick was Iron Man 3.
Iron Man 3?
Yeah.
Really? I mean, I liked Iron Man 3. I thought it was the second best Iron Man. I thought it was one of the best Marvel movies, but it is not even close to reaching my top 10. Psh, really? That's your comeback? Psh.
Yes.
Wow.
And what's not to like about a Robert Downey Jr. movie? I could pretty much just stare at him for 3 hours.
That is a horrible reason to put it in your top six.
That's true. I never claimed to have good reasons.
I'll tell you what I didn't like about Iron Man 3.
Hmm.
I didn't like the fact that they tried to convince the audience that Gwyneth Paltrow was going to die. And then they treat it as like a joke. Like 5 seconds later, Robert Downey Jr. has a witty line to say to the bad guy. Like there was no believability to that. Second, he was barely in the suit throughout the entire movie. It was basically him just controlling Iron Man outfits from afar.
Oh, yeah.
It was more of like a buddy cop flick between Robert Downey Jr. and Don Cheadle. They're firing off guns. They're killing bad guys, which isn't very heroic.
But isn't that... That's the same reason that people said they didn't like Man of Steel, is because he was killing people, and you had a problem with that, so why do you dislike Iron Man 3? I think it's a different circumstance,
because...
But why?
In Man of Steel, you're seeing Superman reborn for a new era. You know, you're getting introduced to him again. He's not perfect. He's not trying to kill people, and in that one circumstance...
Not trying not to.
Yes, he was trying not to. Like, he didn't...
I mean, he, like, tore through towns and stuff.
He was trying to stop other Kryptonians, though. They were going to cause... They were trying to fucking destroy Earth, okay? And he's trying to stop Zod. They're just bursting through buildings. He doesn't have much... He doesn't have much of an option there. And at the end of the movie where he snaps Zod's neck, he doesn't want to do that. He knows he shouldn't do that, but he does do that. Because he has to save those kids from being zapped with that laser. So,
your problem with Iron Man 3 is that he doesn't care.
It's remorseless killing on Tony Stark's part. He didn't kill Justin Hammer, Sam Rockwell in Iron Man 2. And he didn't even really kill Mickey Rourke's character. I forget what his villain's name was. But no, I mean, you're gonna be a superhero and then you're going to start shooting guys? I mean, Iron Man with a gun? That seems a little weird. Like, you weren't bothered by that at all?
Not really.
I don't know. Different circumstance than Superman snapping Zod's neck, in my opinion. Number six for me is 12 Years a Slave. This was a really heavy movie to watch. There are some really, really just graphic, painful scenes. And it was really well done. It was a beautiful film despite the horrible subject matter. Steve McQueen did a wonderful job. If it were up to me, I would give him the Oscar for Best Director of the Year. Just because cinematography, acting, storyline, it was all very well executed. In a lot of ways, this is very close to a perfect film. But it's only number six for me because I did think that there were better movies to come out this year, more important movies to come out this year. But it was really interesting to see someone who's not American direct this type of film with an unbiased viewpoint. Because I feel like if a white American directed it, you would see a really over-the-top, guilt-ridden cinematic portrayal of this. I think Steve McQueen was probably the perfect person to direct this movie.
My number five was Gravity.
Gravity. Now, Gravity was not even in my top 20 for the year.
Not even your top 20?
No.
Oh, gosh. I thought Gravity was beautiful. And I spent the entire movie hyperventilating and killing your arm with my nails.
Yeah, you did almost have an anxiety attack
in the
theater.
Which I think it, like...
Well, here's the thing about Gravity and why it's not in my top 20. That type of movie, you can only watch in a theater. You go home, you watch it on your shitty 24-inch television, you're not going to get the same effect. It's not going to interest you as much. You're going to be like, oh, hey, there's Ghost George Clooney.
Well, it's not going to be like overwhelming, but I still think that you can have the effect.
Don't you think that's the whole point of the film, to see it in something like IMAX where it's like, wow, this is a really gorgeous film. I'm immersed in this, but...
No, I think it can be gorgeous without... an IMAX screen.
Maybe. I mean, it's really well shot and the special effects are amazing, but I just think it'll lose its impact.
I don't know. I disagree. I feel like if I watched it at home, even if it was like on my tiny TV, as long as I was giving it my entire attention.
Let me compare it to another film that came out a couple of years ago and was nominated for an Oscar, and it was a visual masterpiece. Avatar. James Cameron's Avatar. In theaters, in IMAX, gorgeous. It surpassed my expectations. I thought it was great. Even though I really wasn't looking forward to the movie. I thought it looked lame. Watched it again on television. Not as good. The visuals in that really brought it up a peg. And I feel like the same could be applied to Gravity. Now, Gravity's a much smarter film than Avatar. Avatar is really just the same story told over and over. Like, we've seen it many times before. Mm-hmm. The story is nothing. The visuals are everything. Yeah. Gravity, a little bit different. I think it will have some rewatchability. But overall, I think a lot of the impact that the film made... will be lost when you watch it on your TV at home. Number five for me, Only God Forgives. When I brought up Only God Forgives at the start of the show, you kind of made this weird look, like, ugh, really? Ugh, why are you talking about that movie? Ugh.
Not why are you talking, I know why you're talking about that movie. Because you have a man crush on Ryan Gosling.
That has nothing to do with this, okay?
And the director.
Maybe. But how is that any different than you putting Robert Downey Jr.'s Iron Man 3 in your
top
6?
It's not. I didn't question why you were talking about
but
it.
But that's not really even why it's in my top 5, okay? But what is your problem with the movie?
It doesn't seem to really go anywhere.
But don't you think that some movies do not necessarily need a proper three-act structure where it's like, okay, we're going to have something here, we're going to have something in the middle, and we're going to have something at the end.
Sure.
And we're going to hit all three of those points and wrap it up nicely in a neat little bow.
Sure, I agree with that, but I always feel like at the end of movies like that, I know the characters better, and I feel like I've watched them learn something or grow in some way. I didn't feel that way at the end of Only God Forgives.
He loses his hands.
Okay.
He's a violent character. He understands that he'll never be able to shake that violence because he had such a warped upbringing. Like, his brother was a pedophile and a murderer.
Mm-hmm.
He killed his own father.
Mm-hmm.
And his mother is a sick bitch.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? All three of them are dead. And the only one left to carry on that history of violence in a way is him. And so by getting rid of his hands, he's shedding himself of that. So he has changed. He's physically changed, maybe not mentally, but he right. has no other option now but to express that sort of rage in a different way.
If I watch a movie and I don't feel any sort of, like, not even necessarily connection, because I'm never going to connect with a character like that, but if I feel like I don't really know them, I mean, I don't feel like after watching that movie, I really know what drives him.
It was a really weird, abstract, kind of David Lynch-inspired type film. And again, when I first watched it, it didn't connect with me. I didn't like it as much. But after repeat viewings, it really grew on me. And I learned to appreciate it in a different sort of way.
How many times did you watch that movie?
I've watched Only God Forgives about 9 times.
Yeah.
And that came out in when? Like August or October? No, it came out in July. It came out July 19th. I remember because I set it in my phone as Only God Forgives Day.
Only God Forgives
Yeah,
Day.
It came out on Comcast. And I watched it as soon as I got home from work. Again, you know, this movie's not really everyone's cup of tea. If you're expecting Drive or Bronson, or even the Pusher films, you're not going to get that. Nicholas Winding Refn somewhat repeats what he did with Fear X, which was another really David Lynchian film, but he takes it up another level. It's like, okay, I got these somewhat commercial features out of the way. Let me do this pet project where it's going to be nothing but abstractness for the next hour and a half. Only God Forgives is number 5. We're up to the top 4.
Top 4.
Top 4 movies of 2013.
Mine are going to be really underwhelming.
Are they?
Yes.
Why do you say that?
Because my number 4 pick is Man of Steel.
Your number 4 pick is Man of Steel?
My number 4 pick is Man of Steel, which you talked about earlier.
Why did it come in at number 4 for you?
I don't know. I liked it. I enjoyed seeing a Superman film where somebody was the villain other than Lex Luthor, for one thing. I feel like Lex is much more popular.
He's easily the most popular Superman villain. He's been
right.
used in just about every single film.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I understand.
Yeah, so I enjoyed seeing someone other than Lex Luthor as a villain, and
I thought Michael Shannon was kind of weird, though. Yeah, I thought he was a little hokey, and that haircut was so awful.
I liked it.
You liked his haircut?
Do you know what? You know what bothered me about Man of Steel?
What?
I think I remember that. This is such a minimal thing. I think I remember being annoyed that whenever he became Superman, he just magically lost all of the stubble on his face.
What are you talking about? No, the movie jumps around a little bit.
I'm pretty sure.
Maybe he shaved right before he became Superman.
Every time? Wait.
Yeah. Well, no. I think you're confused because it bounces around between different time periods.
Okay, but his
Zack
face
Snyder
was like,
wouldn't fuck that up.
Okay, but his face was like impeccably clean shaven and it bothered me.
The fact he didn't have facial hair bothered you?
It always bothers me when a man doesn't have facial hair.
How many superheroes do you see with facial hair? Iron Man excluded.
Like none.
Exactly.
So? It was just like, it was one day he was living his life and he was sporting a little stubble and then the next day he was Superman and he was clean shaven. Like, why did he make that decision? I just don't really get it.
Because people would identify him. They'd be like, oh.
By his stubble, not by his whole other face.
They'd be like, there's that one guy who stopped that one thing that happened way back when.
But the rest of his face they won't recognize, just the stubble.
No, he was kind of a drifter. Like, he just went town from town doing odd jobs. And he kept his beard throughout that entire time. I mean, if you want to be as unidentifiable as possible, of course you're going to shave your beard.
I don't know. Oh, and I didn't mind the whole him killing thing.
Another thing about Superman killing is that's not really a rule. People think it's a rule because he's a good guy, he's a superhero. You know, he's supposed to do what's morally right. But in the comic books, there's no rule that says Superman can't kill this guy. Especially someone from another world who has the ability to destroy planet Earth. Like, how is he supposed to handle that type of guy? He very vocally expresses that he's not going to stop no matter what. Zod is hell-bent on turning Earth into Krypton, too. But apparently fans just wanted Zod in a fucking jail cell. idiots. I fucking hate comic book fans so much because they find just the stupidest things to gripe about. And yet
like
they praise...
Iron Man 3, people were annoyed with the interpretation of Mandarin.
Yeah, in Iron Man 3, they weren't happy with the Mandarin because the Mandarin didn't really exist. He was a facade that Ben Kingsley took on. And in the comic books, the Mandarin is the equivalent to Lex Luthor, the Joker. So that's where that whole problem arose. But anyway, on to my top four. Any guesses? Because we have seen all four of these films.
Wait, can I have a hint?
No.
I can't have a single hint.
No hints at all.
Old Boy? I don't know.
Old Boy? No. Old Boy wouldn't even go in my top 20.
I didn't think so.
I kind of liked Old Boy, but I also kind of really was disgusted with Old Boy just because it existed and the way that it was executed.
Just because it existed?
Yeah. There was no reason to remake that movie, but I'm not going to gripe about it and be like, ugh, I don't like this movie just because it shouldn't have happened. You know, no movies should happen if you think about it. It's all entertainment. Entertainment is subjective. People.
Yeah, but that one shouldn't have happened in a different way that other movies shouldn't happen.
Like
Now You See Me just shouldn't have happened, but Old Boy shouldn't have happened because it was a bad adaptation of something.
Speaking
else.
Of Now You See Me, that didn't deserve the cast it had whatsoever. That should have had like Stephen Baldwin starring in it. That's how bad it was.
I love Stephen Baldwin. What are you trying to say?
Get the fuck out of here, Jesus.
Fuck you very much.
Anyway, my number four is Her, starring Joaquin Phoenix, Amy Adams, and the voice of Scarlett Johansson. I thought this movie was really heart-wrenching in some scenes, hilarious in others, and I thought Joaquin Phoenix was really great in the role of Theodore. That mustache. Wow.
I liked it.
That was an A-plus mustache.
Yeah, I liked the mustache and the horn-rimmed glasses.
I really liked their portrayal of the future, too. The not-so-distant future, aka like 20, 30 years from now. It definitely seemed realistic, and I could see a lot of that stuff becoming reality at some point. I don't know, maybe it was just me, but I was constantly wondering whether or not Samantha was fulfilling her robotic duties of seeming realistic, or if she was actually on the verge of gaining sentience. And, of course, if you've seen the film, then you know what happened. I found the final part very heart-wrenching and kind of realistic, even though the dude had a fucking relationship with a computer. It just really broke my heart a little bit while I was in the theater. But yeah, that's my number four. So what is your number three? I'm gonna guess it is The Purge.
Ooh, no.
That movie
was
awful.
What is your opinion of me, Dan? My number three pick was actually Looper.
That didn't come out this year.
Yes, it did.
Looper?
Looper.
No, that did not come out this year. Wow, that came out in 2012. This fucks everything up. You just ruined this show. Oh, my God. You can't have a 2012 film in your top three. Wow. Oh, no. What a travesty
Wait,
this is.
Can I pick a different... No, because I wouldn't make...
Now that fucks up the whole countdown. Oh, man.
I can pick a different movie.
Pick a different movie.
My number three is totally Before Midnight.
Before Midnight.
Before Midnight.
Not Looper from 2012.
Yeah.
Okay.
Whoever said that, jeez.
Okay. Before Midnight is a good pick. I like that movie.
Yeah. I want to go to Greece. It was all pretty.
Is that why it's number three?
No. first of all, I'm uncomfortable with the whole, like, way that the relationship played out and everything. But I feel like during the midst of that movie, it was a realistic portrayal of a relationship between two people.
I totally agree.
It's not all happy all the time.
Of course not.
And sometimes they don't want to be with each other.
Sometimes they want to stab each other in the face.
Yeah. I get that feeling a lot.
Oh, no.
But in the end, it's about whether or not they want to be with each other or not. I think that was nice to watch.
My number three for the year, The Wolf of Wall Street. Mm. Now, I was really close to putting it as my number one. Not my number three, so obviously something happened. I realized, hey, recency bias. I watched it for the second time last night, and I loved it, but it does have its problems. I think a good half hour of the movie could have been shaved off. There was a lot of emphasis on Jordan Belfort's character being, you know, just out of his mind, crazy about partying, doing drugs, all this, you know, morally corrupt shit. I think we could have got that as like a point and still gotten rid of, you know, 25, 30 minutes of the movie. I like the fact that it didn't follow a traditional three-act structure, which also applies to the other two films in my top three. But again, you could have summed it up a lot quicker. I do think Leonardo DiCaprio gives one of the best performances of the year. Jonah Hill was amazing with his veneers and the weird glasses and just, smoke crack with me, bro, smoke crack. Like, that scene is just, ugh.
I actually watched, so I watched that movie last night too, and I was watching it with my friend Alex, and he pointed out to me, which I didn't realize for myself, there's a lot of shots of just fully nude women, but no shots of full frontal nudity of men.
There was a gay orgy.
But I don't think you ever saw any penis.
You saw a lot of man ass. Saw Leonardo DiCaprio's ass quite a few times.
I understand that, but that's different than like frontal nudity on a male. So like,
but you also have to understand that the character, Jordan Belfort, during that point in his life, was acting like a frat boy, you know? He was kind of misogynistic.
Yeah.
He was doing all these kinds of
but that doesn't mean
different
that...
things. So why is the movie going to especially when the movie's being told from his perspective, why is that gonna be like, oh hey, here's an erect penis over here. Why don't we concentrate
like
on this for 6 minutes?
It. Do you really think that, like, if you were in a room with a giant orgy going on, you wouldn't notice?
He wasn't in
a
room with a giant orgy going on. His wife was. She walked in on it. So why would we see hard dicks? We wouldn't.
Do you think she wouldn't notice it?
It's being told from Jordan's perspective.
I don't know. I just think it's a weird... Maybe it has something more to do with, like, the rating system, but...
So you're disappointed with The Wolf of Wall Street because there weren't any penises?
Yes, obviously.
Okay. That's all you had to say.
I mean, that's not... disappointing. I just think it was interesting. It was an interesting tidbit. You see a lot of vagina, you don't see any penis. I just think that's interesting with a movie with a lot of sex in it. You don't think that's interesting? You don't think that says something about gender?
No, I think that's specifically because of the character. I don't think Martin Scorsese would have a problem showing a dick if it was necessary. But it's all about his lifestyle.
Even if
he
has
a lot of naked women around him. He has a lot of drugs. So, I mean, why are we going to see DiCaprio's penis? We're not going to.
You don't think that like his character would be interested in his own penis?
Maybe. I don't know. I read The Wolf of Wall Street. He never brings up his dick. Okay, I read the book written by the actual dude. There's no talk of his dick. There's nothing. I mean, all right. Well, actually, there's a couple of things about penicillin shots and fucking hookers in the office. But still, that's different. That's focused on the woman involved in the sexual act.
Okay.
So we're down to two films apiece. Why don't you tell us your number two?
Why don't I? My number two pick is actually a movie that you already talked about. My number two pick was Her, which I watched earlier today. It was sort of creepy, but it was more sobering than it was creepy. I feel like I didn't think it was unrealistic. I could see that happening. People walking down the street, talking to their computers, having relationships with
them. I mean, people have
them.
Relationships with body pillows. They have relationships with
Siri.
It could happen.
Exactly. But I think, I think it was just something to really make you stop and think about the direction that we're headed in terms of technology and our relationship with it.
Mm-hmm. That movie could have been an interesting prequel to Terminator. The robots gain sentience and then take over and start murdering humans.
That's interesting.
They should have, and it's owned by Warner Brothers. They could have had Skynet be the people who put that program out. Throwing that out there.
And Joaquin Phoenix's character reminded me of Johnny Galecki. Is that weird?
That is really weird. You shouldn't be watching The Big Bang Theory, by the way.
I don't care what you have to say.
You're so smart. You have so much promise in your life.
Oh, gee, thank you.
But you watch The Big Bang Theory, and that's what's holding you back.
Why does that matter to you? I like to watch The Big Bang Theory.
Little
by
little.
It amuses me.
Little by little. It's just cracking away your intelligence.
Right.
It's kind of like an hourglass where you have one grain of sand just dropping into the bottom. And little by little. Stacks
okay,
up.
And what do you spend your intelligence on, GTA?
Look, all right,
blowing
there's a lot
of fake cops.
There's a lot more. That's the word I'm looking for. I don't know. GTA just has a lot more intellectual themes and plots to it than.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm wearing a T-shirt.
Rob this bank.
I'm wearing a Flash T-shirt. Bazinga! Ooh, laugh. Ugh, that's horrible. Don't
calculate the velocity you need to travel in order to escape the police. Sure. Intellectual. GTA. No.
It is.
No.
It tells you how to rob a liquor store and get away with it.
So what? Why can't I just have my guilty pleasures?
Bazinga. Ugh. No.
I really don't care what you have to say
about
it.
People shouldn't have guilty pleasures. They should just be...
Yeah, they should.
No, they shouldn't. They should be proud of what they're interested in. But that show...
Okay, I'm interested. I like to watch it. It amuses me. You know what else I like to watch? Switched at Birth. I said it. That's mostly to do with the fact
ABC
that I like
family
ASL,
shouldn't
though.
Exist. Yeah, you at least have a reason behind that because you have a deaf people fetish.
I don't have a deaf
you
people
do too.
Fetish.
But the Big Bang Theory, just
I
no.
I like deaf people like I like all people.
But you
especially
like deaf people.
Especially now because I can communicate with them.
Well, my number two for the year, since we've completely strayed off topic. Any guesses?
Your number two?
My number two for the year, yes.
Place Beyond the Pines.
Wrong.
Darn.
My number two for the year, Spring Breakers.
Oh, I would have put that as your number one.
I know. No, Spring Breakers, I thought was a magnificent film. I thought it was a really misunderstood film. Harmony Korine shot it incredibly well. James Franco gives easily the best performance of the year as Alien.
Tell everyone how you wanted to be Alien for Halloween.
I did want to be Alien for Halloween, but yeah, no. At the theater we had gone to go see it, there were nothing but 16-year-olds in the theater, and maybe four members of the audience decided to get up and clap as soon as the credits started rolling. The other half were just like, huh? What was I don't get. That was weird. That was boring. Yeah. You know, Spring Breakers was a very accurate depiction of this generation. It was a great social commentary, and I think it went over a lot of people's heads. In 10 years, I think people are going to be talking about Spring Breakers the same way that they were talking about Gummo and Kids. This film definitely blew me away, and it was my number one for the longest time. I did think it was the best film of the year. So why don't you give us your number one film of 2013? Huge number one.
My number one movie is actually a movie that you've also already talked about. My number one pick was 12 Years a Slave.
Really? Why did you decide to make it your number one? And do you know how to pronounce the lead actor's name?
Probably not. And I totally bawled like a baby at the end.
You bawled like a baby?
I bawled like a baby.
Bawled.
Yeah.
Your hair fell out.
Yes. Crying is a thing that I'm known to do when watching films. When he was reunited with his family, everybody was just so happy. It was a happy cry.
Chiwetel Ejiofor? Like, I really don't know how to say his first name, so we'll just refer to him as Ejiofor. But he gave a really spectacular performance as Solomon Northup, who is, of course, as the title clearly spells out, a slave for 12 years.
Good observation.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
I thought Paul Giamatti also gave a really underrated performance for the whole minute and a half that he was on screen. That dude from Saturday Night Live as one of the dudes who captures him and sells him into slavery. Him and Scoot McNairy were great. Steve McQueen really did a great job of utilizing really talented. Do you?
I like the name Scoot.
Okay. Thanks for the input.
You're welcome.
Steve McQueen really did a great job of utilizing really talented actors and putting them in small, kind of unlikely positions for the film, in different roles that you might not expect them to play. Michael Fassbender really did he knocked it out of the park. The only thing that pulled me out of 12 Years a Slave, Brad Pitt. As soon as he came on screen, I was like, oh yeah, this is a movie.
He looked Amish to me.
He did. But as soon as he showed up, I was like, oh, okay, Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt's going to save the day. Cool. All right. Thanks, cool. Brad Pitt. You just saved this guy.
Well, you know, like earlier when we were talking about Only God Forgives, where you can't, I felt like I couldn't really connect to the characters. 12 Years a Slave was just the exact opposite of that for me. It was a movie where I was pulled into it and I felt like I really, maybe not connected with the character, but I felt for him and I felt like I knew why he was making the decisions that he made, and I just knew his story. And that's why at the end, when he was reunited with his family, I was happy for him, and I felt like it made me feel like I had gone, I don't want to say gone through it with him, but I don't know, it was just the culmination of all the bad things that he had been through and the end to that.
Yeah, he definitely had a complete story where you saw where everything began, and it was a very full finale.
I liked Benedict Cumberbatch's character. I feel like, because he tried to help Solomon.
Did he? No, he didn't really try to help him.
I mean, he tried to help him as much as he could, and I think that he understood that he was limited in that capacity.
Something I think Steve McQueen did really well was portraying the different facets of racism back then. Because you definitely had people who opposed it, like Brad Pitt's character.
Mm-hmm.
You had people who just went along with it, but they didn't outright hate black people, like Benedict Cumberbatch's character. And then people who totally abused that power and were just complete sociopaths,
like Michael Fassbender.
And his wife. His wife was a nutter. Jesus.
She was a nutter.
Paul Dano was another one who was just out of his fucking mind. He was great in Prisoners and 12 Years a Slave. Mm. You know, he's always going to play that wormy little creepy guy in every movie he does. I thought the character Patsy...
I just wanted somebody to, like, scoop her up. Save her.
Yeah. Patsy was a very likable, very sympathetic character. And she definitely didn't get the fate she deserved at the end of the movie. But, I mean, this is all based on the actual notes. So she didn't get a happy ending. Number one for me.
Wait, do I get to guess?
You can if you want. I don't. I mean, Feel free.
Your number one is totally The Lone Ranger, right?
I did like The Lone Ranger.
More than you expected to.
Oh, yeah. I think that movie was so unfairly criticized. I thought people made it up in their minds beforehand. Okay, this movie's going to suck. I'm not going to enjoy it. And that's why they wound up writing such awful reviews of it. But no, The Lone Ranger is not my number one pick for the year.
Darn.
I will give you one hint.
Mm-hmm.
This movie does feature the amazing talent of the best actor right now, period. Ben Mendelsohn. He was in The Dark Knight Rises. He was on Girls for an episode. And he was also in Animal Kingdom, where he plays uber creepy Uncle Pope. He has kind of a lisp.
I can do this.
You got this. I know
I can
you
do
have
this.
It. What is number one?
He has a lisp.
He has a lisp. Best line in this movie was, "If you ride like lightning,
oh,
you're gonna crash like
place
thunder."
Place Beyond the Pines.
Yes, of course, The Place Beyond the Pines. That movie was so fucking good. Oh my god, The Place Beyond the Pines.
I had your number one and two mixed. I'm disappointed in myself.
Then how did you not name it for number one? But no, Place Beyond the Pines was a movie we went to go see in theaters, and as soon as Ryan Gosling was killed, we left. But then I wound up rewatching it when a screener popped up online. I was like, okay, cool, I guess. I'm still disappointed that Ryan Gosling died. Third time I watched it, got over the fact that Ryan Gosling died in the first half. I'm completely spoiling the movie if you haven't seen it, but if you haven't seen it, fuck you. Third time I watched it, I was like, okay, wow, that was a really, really good movie. Fourth time, this is probably the best movie of the year. What it does is, it's a trilogy of essentially what are short films that center on three different characters. You have Ryan Gosling's character Luke, Bradley Cooper's character Avery, and Dane DeHaan's character Jason, who is the son of Luke. As we've already established, Luke is killed in the first half. He and Ben Mendelsohn's character go on a series of different bank robberies. And when Ben Mendelsohn wants to bow out of that, Luke winds up going on a robbery all on his own. He fucks it up and winds up getting gunned down by Avery, Bradley Cooper's character. The movie then focuses on him, his life, his marriage, and how his murdering of Luke impacts the family that Luke left behind, which was Eva Mendes' character, her boyfriend, or whatever you want to call him, Kofi. And, of course, Luke's son. The entire second act covers Avery's character, and then we move into Jason, as he's a teenager, and his relationship with Avery's son, who is just a complete Guido douchebag.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he's really obnoxious. But that actor did a good job of playing him.
It's true.
And,
and I kind of kept, like, despite the fact that he was insufferable, I kept hoping that it would get better.
That they would mend
fences,
something.
Yeah.
But that just didn't happen.
No.
But yeah, Place Beyond the Pines is definitely, for what it's worth, the best movie of the year, in my opinion. It definitely struck a personal chord with me, and that's probably ultimately why I ranked it above Spring Breakers and Wolf of Wall Street. All three of those movies are just phenomenal, and I highly suggest you check them out. I have to say, I'm pretty surprised that 12 Years a Slave came in at number one for you, and that Warm Bodies didn't even make the top 10.
Why would Warm Bodies make the top 10?
Because you really like that book.
Yeah, I really like the book, and I really like Isaac Marion.
You didn't like the movie as much?
No.
Really?
Yeah. The book was, I don't know if we should get into this, but
no, go ahead.
The book was so much more in-depth than ours perspective. He was sort of like this philosophical zombie, and he wondered why he was how he was, and he struggled with it. I feel like you obviously don't see that in the movie. You don't hear his internal monologue and his struggle with who and what he is. Whereas in the book, you definitely get that. So if you haven't read Warm Bodies, I recommend it. Totally lame, but really, I recommend that you read it. It was really good, especially if you enjoyed the movie in any capacity.
A movie that didn't make my top 10, and I really debated putting it in, that's also based on a book, Dark Knight Returns Part 2. It went direct to DVD, but oh my god, that was just like the best Batman movie ever made. Dark Knight 1, Dark Knight 2. For those who don't know, it's an animated adaptation of Frank Miller's classic graphic novel, The Dark Knight Returns, and it just completely blew me away. But I felt like it would kind of nullify my entire list if I put an animated direct-to-DVD movie in there. And I really think that it's for a niche audience. I don't think anyone can just get up and buy it and be like, oh, wow, that was phenomenal. That was amazing. No, like, you have to be a Batman fan. You have to be tolerable of animation, so ultimately that didn't fall into my top 10, but If you're a Batman fan, please do yourself a favor and check out The Dark Knight Returns.
I still can't believe you think Warm Bodies would be in my top 10.
I really thought you liked that movie a lot.
They completely messed up R's character.
Who cares if he wasn't a 40-year-old man?
I do, obviously. And he was supposed to be wearing a like suit and tie.
Is that really something to bicker about, though?
No, but I still feel like they messed up R's character a lot and that you don't really get to see the depth to him. He's just sort of... He feels 2D in the movie. And I also, for what it's worth, I enjoyed the short story that the book is based off of more than the book. I'm not sure that's worth anything to you, but...
Okay. Well, speaking of movies that disappointed us...
Movies that disappointed us.
Yeah, why don't we do our top five films that we saw in 2013 that disappointed us.
I can do that.
I'll let you start off.
Okay,
is Warm Bodies on the list? Don't spoil, but just give me a head nod or not. Okay. All right. It's not on the list.
Right. I was disappointed by it, but...
Not that disappointed.
I should say that all the movies on my five list are not movies that I necessarily had high hopes for.
Okay.
I just was underwhelmed by them.
Gotcha.
So number five on my list is Upstream Color.
Well, hold on. You can't include you fell asleep right in the middle of that movie.
Exactly.
So what? How can you rank that if you haven't seen it entirely?
It obviously didn't capture my attention at all.
That's such a bullshit reason. We had a long day that day. And
did we?
It was pretty long.
I don't know.
There was a lot of Chinese food and movie watching.
A lot of Chinese food.
It was a stressful day. It was really, it was just, whew.
Yeah.
A lot of work was done.
Yeah. But I thought that it was pretty. I thought it was a pretty movie,
so you thought it was
well
shot.
Yeah, but I didn't think that there was much of a story. It was just kind of disjointed and.
But again, that's another movie that's kind of
jumps from place to place, and it made it hard to follow. Like,
you have to piece everything together after the fact. It's not as straightforward and linear as, say, Iron Man 3.
Oh, shot right to the chest. Cuts deep.
Number five for me. Texas Chainsaw 3D. Now, I knew this movie would be pretty bad, but I didn't understand how bad it would be. It was just, oof. It was like cancer. It was bad. Just
like cancer.
Yeah, don't watch the sequel when it comes out, which I think is actually this year. Avoid it at all costs. Don't let them make any more like this.
Number four for me was The Purge. I thought that was a really cool concept, and I still think it's a really cool concept, but I don't think the way that it was done was particularly great.
I agree. I think had they not hired a white liberal to write the script, which they clearly did.
Blonde hair, blue-eyed, evil guy.
It was just so cringeworthy. I was watching that, and I was like, really? The bad guy is going to be like a preppy, Aryan-esque young man who's college-educated? He's really going to go around and start killing people? No. People like that... They do their evil deeds behind the scenes. If anything, they would go out and hire people to do that shit for them. They wouldn't be like, oh, where's that
very
black
true.
Homeless guy? Let me just murder him. No, that wouldn't happen. I don't know. But I agree. The Purge was horrible. It's not in my top five.
I still think it's a cool idea.
They're going to make The Purge 2, and it's actually going to focus on the middle class. Nothing but middle class people. So I think they'll strike gold with that. That's what they should have done in the first place.
Mm.
Rich white people are evil.
Rich white. Just, what is your number four?
My number four was...
I'm dying to know.
Was Thor 2, The Dark World.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
I was disappointed by that movie.
It was it was just not awesome at all. Now, granted, I didn't like Thor 1, but I didn't think it was as bad as Thor 2. Let's go over what was really horrible about Thor 2. First of all, the bad guys. Like, who the fuck were they? Okay, we got that they're elves. They come from this weird dark realm. But what is their motivation? Like, why are they striving for domination? Other than the fact that...
They are.
Yeah, exactly. There was no backstory or explanation. Again, more scenes with Jane and the other humans just weighed down the film. And what they really should have focused on was the relationship between Thor and Loki. Every scene with Loki made the film tolerable. Without Tom Hiddleston, why bother? And I'm not...
There were very few of them.
I'm not even a fan of Tom Hiddleston. I find his fans deeply annoying. But he really just brought this film up from a 2 to like a 4.5. Give him his own film. I don't understand how people can criticize Green Lantern, the movie, and praise Thor. Like, Thor has a fresh rating on Rotten Tomatoes. Thor 2 has a fresh rating on Rotten Tomatoes. Green Lantern, like, it has a 26.
Yeah, everyone that I talked to about Thor 2 actually really recommended that I go see it.
People are way less critical of Marvel films. They've just accepted...
Why do you think that is?
I'll tell you why it is. it's the Robert Downey Jr. factor. His greatness just, it lingers across. There's a stigma with every single Marvel film now, like, oh, we all like Robert Downey Jr. Iron Man's cool. So, I mean, Thor's kind of cool, I guess, even though it's like, for example, okay, I'm going to compare it to The Wolf of Wall Street. Robert Downey Jr. is Jordan Belfort, okay? And Jonah Hill, we'll say, is the Incredible Hulk. So he's cool. He's got his own cool things about him. We like Jonah Hill. But Thor's like that redheaded guy with the fucked up mustache. Like, he just hangs out with that whole crew. He's not cool on his own. No one really wants to see him. No one really gives a shit about him. But you know what? As long as you're with these guys, you're okay in my book. That's what it is. And for the record, Green Lantern was not great, but it wasn't as bad as people made it out to be.
It took you like 6 tries to actually get through that movie.
It's a fucking awful space movie. I don't like science fiction. I like movies like Prometheus, Aliens.
Okay.
Things that are grounded somewhat in reality. If you try and put me in just a random fantasy world with very little explanation, I'm not going to be as into it as, you know, we start off on Earth in a recognizable setting and we work our way up there. You know what I mean? That's why I can't get into Lord of the Rings. That's why I can't get into Game of Thrones. That's why I can't get into any of that medieval shit.
Because you're no fun. My number 3 was the Bling Ring.
The Bling Ring.
It was boring. They broke into people's houses and stole stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Some stuff happened. Some stuff didn't happen.
A lot of people put it in the same bracket as Spring Breakers, but really, Spring Breakers was...
Ooh, and Emma Watson was freaking me out without her accent.
Oh.
Like, her dress as a slutty American teenager. I'm not a fan. Sorry.
Slutty? What are you, a misogynist? My number 3. A Glimpse Inside the Mind of Charlie Swan III. Now, you haven't seen this movie. I watched it at the start of 2013 because I was like, oh, cool. Charlie Sheen is in a movie. That hasn't happened in a while. Hey, Bill Murray's in it too. Great. It was directed by one of the Coppolas, so I don't know. But it seemed very Wes Anderson-y, but without any sort of wit whatsoever. It was just an unbearable film to watch. Easily one of the worst. And I felt bad, because I want Charlie Sheen to do great things, because I think he's a very talented actor. I think he's an interesting human being, clearly.
Tiger Blood.
Yeah. His show on FX, it's worse than The Big Bang Theory. It's really that bad. This movie, horrible. Horrible! Just horrible. If I had to name a worst movie of the year, it would probably be that. But was it the most disappointing? No. Because I expected something Wes Anderson-y, and I hate Wes Anderson, and I knew what I was getting into. So it's number 3 on my list.
Number 2 on my list is Now You See Me. It was really bad. And this one I actually did have some sort of expectations for. I guess because of the cast that was in it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just really bad. It fell so flat. And I'm not that hard to entertain.
My number 2, Pacific Rim. That was a complete misfire. Just immediately rubbed me the wrong way. I was expecting something similar to Godzilla, I guess. But here's how it went down. It was like, okay, we're going to sum up this world in the first 5 minutes. If you don't adapt, go fuck yourself. Go walk out of the theater. This isn't for you. And I went with it up to a certain point. But the thing that really just didn't jive with me was the fact that it was like its purpose seemed a little manufactured. Like, okay, we're going to come up with this giant monster movie that features a lot of different characters from demographics that don't usually get represented. So, okay, we're going to have tattooed scientists because, you know, people have tattoos in 2013.
I have tattoos.
Yes, you do have 2013. Tattoos. But it felt like, all right, we're just going to ignore all the fine details of the movie. We're not going to try and craft the best movie possible. We're just going to make a fun, stupid movie. And I feel like people wound up really liking this movie and praising it just because it embraced different sorts of characters than what you would usually see. Because you see a scientist, you don't expect them to have sleeves. But it was a bad movie, period. It was not a good movie whatsoever. A good movie that embraced diversity in an accurate sort of way. Short-term 12, that had a lot of different characters, a whole variety of people from different backgrounds, and it didn't feel forced. But Pacific Rim, you know, all that aside, was just completely underwhelming because it didn't bother changing the formula whatsoever. It was really, it felt like an Independence Day type movie, but just updated for the 21st century. That's it. It was stupid. It was dumb.
I didn't dislike it quite as much as you did.
I passionately hate it.
Passionately. I definitely don't passionately hate it.
I thought it was a good-looking movie, but that's it.
Yeah, I'm sort of indifferent to it. I don't really feel one way or the other. I didn't have really high expectations. I wasn't really stoked to go see it, so I wasn't disappointed by it.
Yeah, you were like, really? Pacific Rim? That doesn't seem like a movie you'd be into when we went to go see it. But truth
is, I don't
think
I would say that.
You did say
that. You'd be totally into that movie.
You didn't understand at the time, like, my whole relationship with Godzilla and how much I love Godzilla. And I'm really looking forward to the new Godzilla coming out this year with Bryan Cranston and Aaron Johnson Taylor. I think that's going to be amazing. But Pacific Rim completely fell short of my expectations.
Remember that time we sat 5 feet from Bryan Cranston?
Yes, yes. Talked about that on the last show. Went to go see All the Way, where he played Lyndon B. Johnson. And it was very cartoonish, but also he was really good in the role. And I had a good time, even though I had to
pee. I think he spit on me. It was magical.
Wow. Bryan Cranston spit on your forehead.
Yeah.
And by how much I just trashed it, you would expect it to be my number one, but no. There is a movie I hate more than Pacific Rim. But go ahead. What is your number one disappointment of 2013?
My number one biggest disappointment for 2013 was Oz the Great and Powerful. Because
poor James Franco. Leave him alone.
Poor James Franco, nothing.
Leave him alone.
That movie was, I think it was visually impressive, right? It was very colorful. It was fun. But the actual movie and the story was just really bad. It was really bad.
How did he wind up in Oz?
He was in an air balloon in a tornado, then he just ended up in Oz. What's her face?
Mila Kunis?
Yeah, as the evil witch. Really bad acting.
I kind of like how Mila Kunis was this big celebrity, big well-known actor last year, and now she's just a total nobody.
Like, I wouldn't say she's a nobody.
Nobody even thinks about Mila Kunis. What is she doing?
I don't know. Being beautiful somewhere?
She looks like a shaved rat.
No, she does not.
A depressed Russian shaved rat.
She does not. Her hair is beautiful. Her eyebrows are beautiful. She's got beautiful skin tone.
Wow.
I have a little bit of a woman crush on Mila Kunis. Anyway, it was a really bad. It was a really bad movie. It was really, again, it was pretty. It was visually impressive, I thought, but it was just that wasn't enough to make it a good movie.
Number one most disappointing movie of 2013 for me. Now You See Me. That movie was just a complete bomb. In every way imaginable. How they managed to get such an A-list. They had Jesse Eisenberg. They had Michael Caine, Morgan Freeman, Isla Fisher, James Franco's little brother. Who am I forgetting? Woody Harrelson. Oh, and Mark Ruffalo, of course. Can't forget about him.
Of course not.
Because apparently he fucking plans everything because he's this weird, cool magician guy.
I love Mark Ruffalo.
It was just a complete turd. Yeah, I can't get over how bad it was. I will never watch that movie again for the rest of my life. We went to go see it. I was like, oh, this might be good. You know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong about what I expect of this movie, but I wasn't wrong. It did exceed my expectations in complete awfulness. Really, like everything was completely unrealistic and just over the top and unbelievable. And
it's another movie that I feel like was a good concept, though.
No, it wasn't a good concept.
I thought it was like
all these magicians will meet at this apartment and then they'll go along with this plan I crafted and then something or another illegal and money and get out of here. They must have paid all of those actors really, really well. There's no way I could see any of them signing up to that piece of shit if they weren't paid millions and millions of dollars. Now You See Me is number one on my list of most disappointing films of 2013. Place Beyond the Pines, number one on my favorite films of the year. Amy's number one for her favorite films of the year, 12 Years a Slave. Number one on your most disappointing list was...
Oz the Great and Powerful.
Oz the Great and Powerful, yes. Why don't we wrap the show up? I've been your host, Jamie Kay. And thank you, Amy, for substituting for Kenny.
Here.
Yeah, you've been here.
I've been here.
That's been the 29th episode. We'll catch you next week. We're going to have... The Degenerates Round 2, Mike Malkievich, might be in studio, I don't know. He's requesting the day off. But we'll also definitely have Jack Vieira, we'll have Dylan back, and possibly a surprise fourth guest. And hopefully Kenny will be here for that. So I'll leave you with these parting words. Don't listen to Kanye West music. Good night, folks.
Good night, and thank you.